She was dying on the floor right in front of me. Rayanne covered her mouth. I saw Tim's gun on the nightstand, and I grabbed it, then aimed it at him. I felt myself breathing hard, fury rising up in me just talking about it. If he hadn't let her go, I would have had no choice but to shoot him. I looked her in the face. And I know I would have, Rayanne. She was speechless. I didn't blame her. Tim took off and we threw our stuff in the car fast, emptied the mailbox, then sped away. We spent Christmas Day in a musty hotel. I was sitting there looking through about a week's worth of mail when I came across a big envelope. Inside it was a set of keys to a house, my grandparents' estate left to me. Rayanne wiped her cheek, brushing away a tear, I think. She leaned in. Owen, you have so much courage. I shrugged, then took a long, deep breath. Out came another majorly personal admission. Sometimes I wonder what it would be like if my dad had never left. She searched my face while I stared out at the water. I feel sorry for him, she said. Him? I glared at her. He's the one who left us. And he's the one who's missing out on knowing his son. He totally blew it. It's not that it had never occurred to me to think of it that way. I'd just never been able to convince myself it was true. But it was a nice thing for her to say. Wow. I swatted grass off our blanket, eager to lighten things up. I didn't mean to ruin our night. Are you kidding me? It's been unforgettable. Time for a change of pace. I took out my phone and selected a playlist. Yes, I had a collection of slow music. I can admit that. Once I had my bow tie off and collar unbuttoned, I stood and reached out to her. Dance with me. She put her petite hand in mine. I pulled her body close, and my cold stomach did a flip. She rested her head on my chest, and I inhaled the sweet vanilla of her hair. Just like that, my sad stories faded away, back into the recesses of my mind. She smiled up at me. Did you purposely play this song? I didn't. A 1980s classic, Lady in Red, had come up first on my playlist. It really was a coincidence. We swayed back and forth next to the glistening water, my hands resting on her lower back, her warm arms wrapped around my neck. It was like the moon was shining just for us, like the stars aligned so that we'd be there at that very moment. I didn't think it could happen like this, not this fast. But I'd totally fallen for her. My heart belonged to her, whether she'd intended to capture it or not. I looked down at her, and she tucked her head like she was feeling shy. She started to say something, then stopped. Then started to say something else, but stopped again. What is it? I'm sorry. She loosened her embrace. It's... I can't find the words. You? I leaned back and gazed into her face. It's okay, Rayanne. We were barely moving now. I ran my fingers over the back of her neck, then lifted her chin. Just tell me. She exhaled slowly, like she was nervous. I guess I didn't realize when we blew off prom that we'd end up alone in such a, well, a place this romantic. So? I stared at her glossy red lips. I just want to be careful. I love that we've become such good friends, but I guess I'm afraid of taking things further. I heard what she said, and I really did care, but I couldn't resist. I leaned in, desperate to kiss her. But she turned her face and pressed her head to my chest again. Crushing rejection. It took me a second to regroup. I'm sorry, Ray. I didn't mean to... No, it's not your fault. She let go and stepped back. You didn't know. Know what? She crossed her arms. Look, you can make fun of me all you want. I don't care.
What? Why would I do that?
'Cause that's what people do.
Who?
People I've told. I pulled her close again.
What are you talking about?
She pulled down on my neck, speaking directly in my face. I'm saving my first kiss for my wedding day, okay? I've never kissed anyone. She let go and tapped her foot.
Go ahead, start teasing me. I can take it.
I hugged her and laughed.
I'm not gonna tease you.
But you think it's stupid, right? Well, it's not stupid to me. I've made up my mind.
Hey, I didn't say it was stupid.
She sat down on our blanket and motioned for me to sit too.
So what do you think?
Honestly, not kissing until marriage seemed really over the top. But at the same time, I couldn't help but respect her for it.
You really want to know?
Yeah, I do. I sighed.
I think it's awful.
What?
Okay, so Rayanne could cop an attitude.
Wait, I smiled.
Let me finish.
I think it's awful, except...
Yeah?
For the incredibly lucky man who gets that kiss.
Her pout rose to a grin.
Thanks. Seriously, it means a lot. I nearly tried to kiss her again, but remembered that was a no-no.
Owen?
I had a bad feeling about what was coming next. I want us to stay good friends, and I'm worried that if I open up my heart to something more, it won't end well.
I didn't get it.
Well, since we can't even kiss, isn't friends the only choice we have?
That's what I'm talking about. You don't even know how to be more than friends without fooling around. I want something more meaningful than that.
And I want someone who loves the Lord like I do. She might as well have clobbered me in the face with a fistful of dirt.
Are you saying I'm not good enough?
I probably sounded hurt, 'cause I was.
No, I'm saying I'm not good enough, not strong enough to date you. I think it would make it difficult for me to keep my priorities straight. And saving things for marriage, that would be really hard since you don't believe in that.
I guess that was her attempt at putting a humble spin on things. But to me, she was still saying I flat out didn't measure up. Look, we both know I'm not a church boy and faith doesn't come naturally to me. But I really am trying, more now than ever. And if you're asking me to keep my hands off you because you've set your heart on saving yourself for marriage, I'll do it. I'll respect your wishes because... I almost took the coward's way out and said something about how much I admired her.
Because I care about you, Ray. A lot.
Chapter 30.
Someone has pep in his step today. I rolled my eyes. My mom could be so dorky. But I really was feeling the best I had since my world had imploded. I'd actually slept so well the night before that I'd pressed snooze on my phone like 5 times. I lowered myself onto my motorcycle and made a mental note. Only 6 more Mondays before graduation. I couldn't imagine what the next phase of my life would be like, but I was 100% sure who I wanted with me. I just started my bike when my cell rang. I hoped it was her.
Nope.
Did you hear? Jess was sobbing so hard it didn't sound like her.
About Megan?
All my happiness hit the pavement.
What happened?
She overdosed. She didn't die, but they're saying it doesn't look good. She's in intensive care.
What?
It was like my throat had clamped shut, but I still managed to talk.
She was better, much better.
Sometimes it just seems that way.
No.
I couldn't accept that.
I'm telling you, suicide was gone.
Huh?
What hospital's she at?
I don't know yet.
She cried even harder.
I'll call you back.
I hung up and drove around in a daze, my blood pressure rising like the Texas heat in July.
I tried to stop her.
But she gave in, surrendered to the hate-filled lies of an enemy whose only motive is destruction. Why couldn't Lance listen to me? Why didn't the Watchman intervene?
I'd known she was in trouble, but it hadn't mattered. I saw her, clear as day, charging toward a steep, unforgiving cliff called suicide, but no one would help me hold her back. I had thrown her a rope, but she let it slip through her fingers. I swerved onto the grass alongside a desolate road and parked my bike, breathing so hard I thought my lungs might explode. The pain of injustice burned inside my chest like I'd been impaled with a steel-tipped arrow. I stumbled onto the grass, pounded my fists into the earth.
What's the matter with you?
I lifted my head and raged at the universe and its supposed maker.
How could you let this happen?
I picked up a good-sized rock and hurled it into the street, watching it splinter into a thousand rolling pieces.
If the Watchmen work for you, you suck at commanding your army.
I kicked a hard mound of dried mud and glared up at the blue expanse. I didn't care if I became fitted with a shackle. I wasn't done talking. I cupped my hands around my mouth and shouted as hard as my throat would let me.
God, I hate you!
I collapsed in the grass beside my bike, then slammed my elbow against my front tire over and over and over. I finally pulled my knees into my chest and rocked back and forth. It was quiet on that back street, no sound but an easy breeze. But my declaration rang in my ears, echoing across a realm where words travel faster and farther than light, and superhuman beings are always listening. I wanted them to hear me. I'd meant what I'd said. My phone rang. I scrambled to yank it out of my pocket.
Owen?
It was Lance. No hostility, just sorrow.
Can you come to Central Hospital? Megan.
I know. I'll be there. I started my motorcycle and adjusted the rearview mirror. No shock to me. Faithless was watching me a short distance away, with two more creepers at its side. I gassed it. Of course the press was there, reporting outside the hospital. If they were at all grieved by Megan's tragedy, I couldn't tell. I refused an interview. Lingering outside the entrance was another nuisance, the crazed redhead, the most insane of all the protesters. He had countless chains, even more than my mom. He glared at me and I scowled right back, way too on edge to put up with one of his outbursts. Good thing he kept his mouth shut. Inside the hospital lobby, that dusty, soot-looking stuff was everywhere, blanketing the floors and smeared on the walls and chairs and couches. My classmates were there, too, tons of them huddled together, and the powdered residue was stuck to them, on their shoes and clothes. A nurse walked by, and she was really covered, clumps of the ashy dust on her face and lips and all in her hair. I looked down, and it was already stuck to my shoes. And I was so cold, my ears and nose and fingers were numb. Out of the corner of my eye, the walls appeared to breathe. I looked closer and realized they were teeming with creepers, crammed full, all shoving and shifting like worms slithering in a mason jar filled to the top. No doubt, feeding off an atmosphere of human suffering and death. And despite the sunlit windows and lighting fixtures, the hospital was dim,
like the air was soiled with smog. I was tempted to go back outside, but then I saw Rayanne, her light so bright and cleansing that the space around her was clean. She walked to me, and everywhere she set her feet, she left clean footprints. She hugged me, and I could take a breath. "Have you seen Lance?" I asked her. She pointed. He was exiting some double doors. People swarmed him, but he came straight to me, eyes bloodshot and puffy. Guess I'd underestimated how much our friendship meant to him after all. I didn't know what to say, just put a hand on his shoulder. The dust from his shirt stuck to my hand. He bit his lip, working to keep his emotions in check. "You can't go into her room, but they said I could have someone back there with me." I didn't want to go near her or anyone else spiraling toward death, but I followed Lance anyway. Even if things between us weren't like they used to be, I wasn't willing to turn my back on him, not now. The ICU was darker than the lobby, the walls just as possessed. We passed numerous rooms on the way to Megan's, and at first I mostly kept my head down, until I noticed something horrid. A sickly old man appeared bound to his hospital bed by thick, spiderweb-looking strands woven over his bony body. The grayish threads stretched out and clung to the walls. A creeper hovered overhead, watching. I forced myself to keep walking. The patients in the following rooms had webs, too. "Wait here. I'll be back." Lance went to Megan's bedside, and I peered in from the hallway. More webs. She was on life support, had already been resuscitated once, I heard her parents say. Megan's mom, normally an attractive woman, looked half-dead herself. And Megan's dad, well, let's just say he was doing good to be standing. Megan was hooked up to all kinds of machines and monitors that beeped and blinked, and tubes stretched in every direction through the spidery threads. Her shackle was still in place, chains draping to the floor, and her jagged cords sprawled across her pillowcase. Lance came back into the hallway. "The doctors say that we should... that we have to consider letting her..." He closed his eyes and broke, sobbing on my shoulder. I had no clue how to console him, but I was willing to stick it out until the very end, which probably wouldn't be long now. When Megan's brother showed up, having sped all the way from College Station, the environment became so intense and emotional that I had to take a break and walk away for a minute. Megan's family was falling to pieces, wailing. I couldn't take it. I wandered down the dingy hallway, my mouth completely dry, but I was reluctant to drink from the water fountain. The place felt contaminated. A few more steps and something bright caught my eye. An elderly lady propped up in her bed, a light. Nothing sinister on her body, over her bed, or in her room. She looked a century old, but her radiance was extraordinary. It lit the bottom half of her bed with a shimmering aura. Her neck was layered with wrinkles and covered in brown age spots, but it was visible, which was more than I could say for most people. I stood by the door, watching her sleep. I inched closer, intrigued. Her room was peaceful and way cleaner than the hallway. I stepped in farther, my face and fingers thawing the closer I came to her. "Is that you, John?" I nearly had a heart attack when her eyes sprang open and she spoke. I looked over my shoulder. No one there. "No, ma'am, I'm Owen." "Come here, son." Her eyes drifted closed again, but she was smiling, not a tooth in her gums. I stopped a foot from her bed. She reached with her wobbly hand, motioning for me. I stepped forward and she gripped my fingers the best she could. Her knuckles were enormous. You remind me of my son.
She grinned again and squeezed my hand.
He died in the war, 23 years old.
Oh. Her eyeballs were so deep-set it was like they'd fallen back into her brain. She fell asleep again. The light around her feet was bright enough to penetrate through the bedsheets.
It's so nice of you to come see me.
A sudden burst of consciousness. Sure. She tried to focus her cloudy eyes on me. Given the circumstances, it seemed okay to ask. You have this incredible glow. Do you know why? She let out a raspy laugh that shook her whole body.
I'm going home soon.
Then she was out again. Poor lady. From the looks of things, she was never going home again. But she had a lifetime behind her. Megan's life was just getting started. I draped the nice old lady's arm over her bony chest and slipped my fingers away. I stepped into the hallway, and an announcement blared through the intercom. I knew enough about hospital protocols to recognize that the term Code Blue wasn't good. Medical personnel raced by, into Megan's room. I had to get down there for Lance. I raced down the hall. What I saw next will never, ever leave me. Chapter 31. I stopped outside the doorway of Megan's room. It was a hurricane of activity. A doctor hovered over her, clutching an electric paddle in each hand. The only thing louder than the monotone alarm of Megan's cardiac flatlining was the high-pitched squeal of the defibrillator charging.
Clear!
The doctor yelled. She plunged the paddles against Megan's chest, jolting her body. Megan's mom fainted. Her brother was frantic, yelling at the doctors to keep trying. They hit her a second time, still no pulse. Lance fell back into a chair and covered his face. I was a statue, frozen, numb with disbelief. They shocked Megan a third time. The doctor stepped back. No response. But then everything changed. Suicide sat straight up in the bed, extending out of Megan's torso. I rubbed my eyes, trying to comprehend it, but the realization was unbearable. It had never left her, never truly detached. Instead, suicide had somehow pried its way through her skin and stuffed itself inside her body, sabotaging her night and day from within. The ultimate act of trespass. Now that Megan's heart had stopped, suicide used its long arms to hoist up and out of her, cackling in the face of her family's anguish. It passed through the third-story window at the same time that two other creepers oozed out of the webbed wall above Megan's bed. One pounced on her chest and tore her cords out of her head, while the other ripped her chains off with one hand. They wrapped them around her shackle, winding and squeezing against her neck, like they wanted to suffocate her, even though she'd already stopped breathing. One creeper, Damnation, charged through the side of Megan's bed and stood on her, inside of her, at her waist, grinding its teeth, drooling on her. The other one, Thief, peered down from the opposite side, arched over her head. Like calculated serial killers, they plunged their hands into her stomach, then pulled, ripping a shadowy figure out of Megan, leaving a dusty, gaping hole. My knees buckled and I hit the floor. The shadow was Megan. Her soul, kicking, screaming, flailing, begging for mercy. They dragged her off the bed, away from her body, and clawed at her with repeated blows. She fought back, twisting and straining to grab onto something, anything.
Daddy!
Her blood-curdling cries sent tremors through my body.
Help me!
Her plea fell on deaf ears. I couldn't breathe, couldn't comprehend it.
couldn't stop the abduction being carried out 10 feet away from me. They struck her in the mouth, silencing her, then pushed her down to the dust-covered floor, whipping their heads back and forth now, so fast that they became a dark blur. Out of the ashen ground cover, a being emerged. He had the bodily frame of a creeper, but was considerably bigger. A face as pale as a corpse. No infected markings or letters. He was draped in long, shredded garments that may have been light-colored at one time, but were now a filthy gray, completely saturated with that nasty dust, and stained with what appeared to be splatters of dried blood. A black crown of spiky thorns was pressed into his head, and he had wispy, long hair, even whiter than his colorless face. Damnation and Thief released Megan's soul to this superior presence, then ran back into the wall like spooked rats. All went silent. I thought I was going to pass out. I struggled, disoriented, like I was outside of my body, too. The pale creeper's presence was disrupting my equilibrium, throwing my senses out of whack. He bent to the ground and lifted Megan's chin, gazing down on her with the most nightmarish eyes I'd ever seen, white pupils floating in a pool of black.
"Please, have mercy," Megan sobbed, shaking, laboring to speak. "Don't hurt me, send me back, I beg you."
I waited, hoping against all odds. But her captor narrowed his ghostly eyes and snarled, answering her pleas with heartless contempt. The floor suddenly crumbled beneath them, and they sank down, swallowed by the ground.
"No,"
I reached to her. Out of the black crater, Megan grasped with both arms, battling to cling to the hospital floor, her legs dangling into darkness.
"Megan!"
My body was so heavy I could barely move, but I managed to get into her room and pull myself toward her, stretching my arm as far as it would go. She lifted her upper body out of the hole and I grabbed for her, but my hand passed through hers. Hard as I tried, I couldn't make contact. Her soul was in another dimension now, far beyond my grasp. That instant, a white hand reached up from behind Megan, spreading its clawed fingers across her forehead. My eyes met Megan's, a final word on her shivering lips.
"Owen!"
Her head jerked backward and her arms gave way. I saw her drop, disappear into darkness, banished from the land of the living.
"No!"
I rolled onto my back and convulsed, unable to cope, terrorized from limb to limb. I saw Lance hovering over me, then all went black. I don't remember waking up or how I got into a chair, but I do know I was wrapped in a blanket, and a lady in scrubs had handed me a cup of water. I was seated by the nurse's station not far from Megan's room. Her empty body still lay in the bed, a hollow shell, her midsection ravaged, just like Walt's. No more monitors or lights or sounds. Lance stroked her hand. I heard a nurse say that someone from the morgue was on the way. Lance bent down and kissed the back of his girlfriend's hand, tears dripping down his cheeks. Then he backed away into the hall. I shrugged the blanket off my shoulders and pushed down on the arms of my chair. It wasn't easy to stand or to make sense of reality.
"Lance."
I meant to call his name, but instead barely whispered it. I stepped toward him, working to keep my balance, struggling not to break down. He saw me and came the rest of the way. Then snapped.
"You said this would happen. Did you talk her into it? Put dark thoughts in her head?"
"What? I... no."
"Did you want her dead?"
Several nurses stopped. Megan's distraught brother looked over his shoulder.
"People around you keep dying, Owen."
"I cared about her." I backed up. He closed the gap between us and shouted in my face, "Get out of here, now!" I came because you... I said leave.
A police officer looked our way. I turned my back on Lance and made my way down the hall, the effects of trauma so severe that I honestly couldn't tell if I was dreaming or not. I was nearing some exit doors when a nurse called to me.
Excuse me, sir?
It shouldn't have scared me, but it did.
Are you a relative or friend of Ms. Ada Knowles?
Who?
I couldn't think. I didn't need this. I saw you talking to Ms. Ada earlier. Did you hear?
Hear what? I grabbed the collar of my t-shirt and twisted it, breathing heavy through my mouth.
She passed a few minutes ago.
I couldn't stand still.
And?
I thought you might want to pay your respects.
I bent over, hands on my thighs, beads of sweat trickling down my face despite how cold I was.
I didn't know her.
You're the only visitor she's had.
That's not my problem.
I yelled so loud the police officer started down the hall. I stood upright, hands cupped over my mouth, trying to come to grips. Lance was walking in my direction now with Megan's brother. I couldn't take another confrontation. I ducked into the deceased old lady's room.
Another soulless body, yet this was nothing like what I'd just seen. Her glow was gone, but her flesh was untouched. No bindings, no hideous dust-covered wound. The room seemed serene and quiet, and a lingering, vitalizing scent let me know a watchman had been there. Maybe several.
Goodbye, Ms. Ada.
It was the best I could do. I stepped out of the haunted hospital into the afternoon sun, so shaken that I actually tried to outrun my own shadow. Once home, I hid under a pile of blankets in the corner of my closet, curled in a fetal position, suffering from cold sweats and night terrors, even though the sun lit up my room. It didn't matter whether my eyes were open or squeezed closed. I saw Megan's face, the horror in her eyes. I never wanted anyone to say my name ever again.
Chapter 32. Post-traumatic stress disorder was more than a psychiatric term in a textbook for me now. I quit going to school. Quit eating. Quit living, really. For 15 days.
Chapter 33. It felt like I dropped out of life for 15 years. My only connection to the outside world was Rayanne. I told her what had happened to Megan, and for several nights after that, the only way she could sleep was if her mom was lying next to her. She missed some school, too, exhausted and sick with sorrow. My mom nagged me to get out of bed, but I was determined to isolate myself until my mind quit rehearsing Megan's demise. And I refused to go to the funeral. I was done with burying the dead. Megan wasn't in a better place and couldn't possibly be resting in peace. And hearing someone say that she was would have pushed me over the edge. I didn't know where that captor had taken her soul, but I was sure it was unbearable. It took a while, but I finally came to understand that I'd never get over her death, not even slightly, because she wasn't truly dead. Her body was, but not her. It was a Thursday afternoon when I pulled the covers back, tired of nursing a wound that couldn't heal. I wanted to strike back, take some revenge. I was so desperate to put the creepers on the defensive that I was willing to try just about anything. My frustration gave birth to a plan that I knew had almost no chance of working. My dog was fixated on my mother's closed bedroom door, barking her head off. Perfect conditions.
Stay there, girl. I'll be right back.
I went to Home Depot and bought the biggest, highest-powered flashlight on the shelf.
then hurried home, ready to shove my mom's bedroom door open and shine the light directly into the creeper's eyes. They have an aversion to people's light, right? So maybe this was worth a try. As I neared my house, it was clear my experiment would have to wait. A patrol car was in my driveway, and Detective Benny was pacing next to it. He saw me before I could make a U-turn. I parked my bike and sipped a bottle of sweet tea as I approached him, like his presence created no anxiety in me whatsoever. "Hello, Owen." He was one of those guys who nearly fractures bones when he shakes your hand. "I need you to follow me to the station right now. We've got some more questions to ask you." I dragged my feet back to my motorcycle, then texted Rayanne and my mom. I told Rayanne I'd be off the grid for a while, unplugging to clear my mind. I told my mom the truth. I was escorted to a gray-walled interrogation room where Detective Benny lowered into a chair across the table from me, then tapped his pen over and over on a yellow notepad, like some sort of mental torture technique. My mind was fragile enough. "Can I get you something to drink, Owen?" "I'm fine, thanks." He glanced at a clock on the wall, and I counted four cords spewing from the back of his thick head. "Please recount the events that took place the day before Walt and Marshall's deaths. Start with what you did that morning and early afternoon, then explain in as much detail as possible what happened once you met up with the two boys. Leave nothing out, please." He wouldn't have brought me here if he didn't have increased suspicions and probably some new evidence on me. But there was no time to think up a new cover story, and besides, I'd watched enough episodes of Dateline to know that was a big mistake. He'd be listening for inconsistencies, so I told the same story I'd already told him twice before. Believe me, I was tempted to crack and come clean about the water, but how would I explain my decision to hide it until now? Let's face it, guys like me get killed in prison, and death was to be avoided at all costs. I'd seen the Grim Reaper in the flesh, and knew now that his kingdom of eternal darkness was real. I spoke for about 20 minutes, concentrating so hard I got a headache. Or maybe my soaring blood pressure caused it. I worried the detective could feel my pulse reverberating across the table. I tried to act normal, even though normal was a distant memory. I didn't kill them on purpose. I said it over and over in my head, trying to convince myself that I wasn't a real murderer, and certainly didn't deserve to share bunk beds with men who were. But I didn't believe me. I'd committed an incredibly selfish act that had resulted in the loss of two lives, two young souls I now imagined had been sucked into the same black pit as Megan. Justice demanded some sort of penance on my part. But I couldn't bring myself to confess. Human nature at its worst, I guess. "Owen, some of your classmates have expressed concerns about your mental and emotional stability. Let me guess, Dan Bradford? He'd say anything to get me in trouble." Lance might have squealed, too. "Well, for starters, your girlfriend, Jess, says you've been acting delusional and even claiming to see scary creatures. She said you recently jumped on top of her and nearly smothered her, supposedly because you believed you were protecting her from something unseen that was out to get her." I made a fist, barely resisting the urge to punch the table. "She's my ex-girlfriend, and with all due respect, sir, what does that ridiculous accusation have to do with Marshall and Walt's deaths?" "According to their autopsies, the cause of death appears to be the result of having ingested a hazardous substance of some kind. The problem is these two young men don't fit the profile of kids who wanted to kill themselves, and we have to do our due diligence to investigate all other possibilities, including homicide." That's all it took for murder to poke its grisly head through the wall. "I've already told you everything I know." I strained to keep my eyes on the detective, not the predator staring me down. "But I haven't told you everything I know, Owen. I gripped the sides of my chair, bracing myself for physical evidence that I couldn't explain away. Walt's mother said her son came home that evening complaining that you made him drink something that made him very sick. Are you starting to connect the dots, son? He likely died of poisoning, and said you were the one who coerced him into drinking the weird water, as he called it. And your classmates are saying you're not in your right mind. That doesn't look so good, does it? I had no choice but to pull the ripcord. I'd like to speak with my lawyer. I didn't have one, but it was time I found one, fast. Detective Benny let me go. My mom was in the parking lot, rushing toward me.
Owen, what did they want?
It's a big misunderstanding, Mom. People are making up accusations about me, like I had something to do with Walt and Marshall's deaths. I could hardly tell the difference between the truth and my lies anymore. Her face turned as white as a bleached sheet.
I'll get a lawyer.
Rayanne invited me over that evening, and I jumped at the chance. I told her I'd help her get her math homework done even faster, but yeah, that didn't happen. I was too distracted. By the astronomical stressors in my life, of course, but also by her. On the sofa next to me. All I could think about was how badly I wanted to pull her on top of me, escape for a little while under the weight and touch of her body. Her mega blue eyes were getting to me, making me wish I'd never committed to her to hold back. I actually felt a tinge of resentment that she'd asked that of me. I guess she sensed my longing. She scooted away and tucked a throw pillow between us. I could have ripped that pillow apart with my bare hands. I wanted to respect her commitment to purity, as she called it, but at the same time it presented a provoking challenge. Could I persuade her to give in to me? I leaned toward her, my elbow crushing the ugly pillow, mouthing soft words close to her ear, giving it my all.
You want something to drink?
She stood, basically dumping a bucket of ice water on my head. Sure. She went into the kitchen and I stayed on the sofa, alone. Just me and my frustrated ego. But not for long. A creeper poked its head through the front door, its lethal eyes targeting me. Its name was easy to read. Lust. So creepers can smell pheromones, I guess. It didn't stay there long and didn't dare come in, not inside a home full of lights. But I was still disgusted with my behavior. I'd never thought of myself as a Dan Bradford, the type that uses girls. And the thought of Rayanne being used filled me with rage. Yet I wanted to. We drank some purple Kool-Aid, then I went home, wrestling with my motives while also trying to get the image of Megan's face out of my mind. I couldn't go very long without seeing it. I sat down at the desk in my bedroom and couldn't resist texting Jess. Thanks for trying to get me arrested. A minute later, my phone rang. She spoke without taking a breath.
I know you're probably furious, but the police came to my house and questioned me, and at first I didn't say much, but the more they asked me about you, the more I just told the truth about stuff. After they left, I felt really bad, like I'd betrayed you or something, and I thought about telling you, but I just didn't know how. I don't think you did anything bad whatsoever to Marshall and Walt, Owen.
I was prepared to really sock it to her, but I lost all momentum after she groveled. I'm sorry was not in Jess's vocabulary, but I knew that's what she meant. And honestly, I kind of understood where she was coming from. I knew from personal experience how distressing it is to lie to the police. What was eating at me now, though, was that she had refused to believe me in the first place.
Jess, are you even slightly willing to consider that my warnings to you were true?
For all I knew, her ears were being blocked.
Owen, what do you expect? I can't possibly believe what you're saying. No one could. Besides, your claims are really terrifying.
I was well aware how terrifying they were,
That's why I wanted her to take them seriously.
Oh, well. There was no sense in trying to convince a shackled person to believe me. On Sunday night, there was a candlelight vigil being planned in Megan's honor, and in memorial of the other suicide victims, at Franklin Park of all places. My mom tried to guilt me into going, but eventually we made a truce. She'd leave me alone about it if I started going to school again. Done. Masonville High was a mess. The graffiti was out of control. Every solid surface had more black than blank space. The halls were lined with creeper notes, but people paid no attention, trampling them without a thought. I tried pointing them out, even showed one guy how they dissolved when you touched them. All he said was, "Dude, get off the floor." I spotted a hulking creeper in an empty bathroom and took the opportunity to put my mega flashlight to the test. I pulled it from my backpack and aimed it at the creeper's hazy eyes. I might as well have thrown baby powder at its cheeks. No effect whatsoever. I shook it off and kept brainstorming. By now, I could look at a certain classmate or teacher and recall which creeper tended to torment that person. I would see someone, like my friend Sammy, for example, and think, "Hey Sam, where's aggression today?" My goal of helping people seemed like a pipe dream now. I'd lost all confidence in my ability to encourage people out of their bondage. I'd seen where that got me with Megan, with Jess and my mom, too. At least Ashlyn seemed to be doing better. She'd agreed to help Ray Ann start a Fellowship of Christian Athletes chapter. I told Ray I'd be glad to hang their FCA posters, but that's about it. I was on my way to fifth period, navigating around people's chains, when the creepers began charging in the same direction, scurrying like the watchmen were back. Naturally, I followed. One by one, they threw themselves to the floor, lying prostrate in single-file lines that stretched all the way across the cafeteria, which was clear of tables this time of day. I ran up a nearby stairwell to watch, stopping on the landing between the first and second floors, overlooking the open space. The creepers were falling into a pattern, every other one facing the direction opposite its neighbor, so that their heads were beside one another's feet. They clung to each other's ankles, creating tight X's with their lanky bodies, blanketing the floor like a mildewed, mutilated carpet. The bell rang, but I stood there, enthralled. Like the pounding of 1,000 bass drums, I felt it in my chest when, all at once, they began chanting in unison. It was loud, much louder than I'd ever heard them before, but I couldn't understand them at first. Then, "Ave Rex Molech, Dominus Mortuorum." They rolled their toxic tongues in one accord. Latin. I knew exactly what it meant. Then came the proclamation in English. "Hail the King, Molech, Lord of the Dead." Over and over they chanted with raspy, booming voices, in one earthly language after another. That's when my body was seized by a mind-altering sensation that threw my balance off and gave me a nauseating high. My freezing, clammy palms slid down the metal banisters, and I caved to the floor. I felt sweat fall from my forehead, only it appeared to travel up from the ground back onto my face at a delayed speed. I wanted off the ride. Then I saw him, emerging from the suicide memorial fence outside and passing through the wall, into the cafeteria, looking like an elaborate Halloween costume. Only this monstrosity was alive. Two creepers crawled on their hands and knees, trampling on top of their prostrate co-conspirators, straining under his weight. He dominated his slave escorts using reins attached to sadistic face harnesses, a foot crammed into each of their swayed backs. Every twist of his wrist elicited agonizing shrieks, to which he lifted his chin all the more,
It was him again. The same monster who had plunged Megan's soul into the depths of the dead. He closed his eyes and slowly swept his head back and forth, like the creeper's praise infused life into his soulless existence. Once he trod over his submissive subjects, they rose to their hands and knees and crawled behind him, forming a massive entourage, never lifting their brainwashed heads. I couldn't turn away. Despite my hostility toward him, his presence had a seductive power that mesmerized me. Could this be God? I shoved my face between two banisters to steady my wobbly, swollen head, and watched as the Lord of the Dead, Molech, finally came to a halt in the center of the cafeteria. The creepers huddled on their knees at his feet, hands lifted high, yet wincing, visibly troubled by his presence. They didn't dare look him in the face. The king lifted one gigantic hand, and all activity instantly ceased. He paused, then shoved his other hand out, claw-like fingernails so long and thick they were visible from where I was. The creepers moved back at once. I remained doubled over on the stairwell, bewitched by fascination mixed with despair. It only got worse when the dictator belted out a command, an inhuman word that called forth an inhumane world. Chapter 34. The ground split open. The cafeteria floor tiles disintegrated before my eyes, unveiling a place of unimaginable anguish. The walls looked like human body tissue and stretched down so far that I couldn't see the bottom. A fire appeared to simmer below. Out of the tissue hung the dusty remains of countless arms, legs, heads, all kinds of scorched human appendages, reaching and flailing to a soundtrack of agonizing crying, cursing, and wailing. I didn't know how much more my body could take. I thought my heart might give out, too despondent to contract. I pressed my eyes closed as hard as I could, but not before seeing creepers crawling over the pulsating walls of the pit, jabbing any shadowy soul that dared to try and claw out. It was a hate-filled place of torment that smoldered with heat but somehow worsened the chill in my stomach. All I could think about was how badly I didn't want to go there, how no human belonged there. I opened my eyes, hoping it was over, but instead I saw the creepers outside the pit, leaning away, pushing against one another like they dreaded falling into the fiery chasm. Their crowned cult leader motioned for a certain creeper to come forward. Traitor. He approached and stood by Molech's side, then leaned and whispered into the king's ear. A sinister grin crept across Molech's face. One by one, he summoned creepers forward. They were shoved to the ground, made to kneel before him, battered heads hung low. 16 in all, tattled on by traitor. I could only assume they'd blundered their assignments, somehow failed to live up to the scars on their faces. Then came the king's swift judgment, a ferocious kick to the chest, sending each of them hurtling backward into the sweltering hole. Immediately, they went to work, patrolling and punishing captive souls. The dead, I presumed. Molech nodded at traitor, releasing it to rejoin the ranks, but as soon as it turned, he shoved it from behind, plummeting the snitch into the pit with the others. I knew by now this king couldn't possibly be God. If a master of the universe existed, surely he didn't need an informant to tell him anything. Even I knew that. Molech resumed his exalted position up front, mounted on the crooked backs of the same two creepers. Then, like the ocean tide rushing up the shore, the ground closed over the pit, concealing the suffering dead. That's when Molech's demeanor changed. Narrowed eyes, spastic movements, intense, sharp gestures. Like old footage of Adolf Hitler. I couldn't decipher his speech. His dialect was not of this earth. but his body language spoke volumes. He was mobilizing his troops, rallying them around the mission. He pointed outward and also to the ground as if referring to my classmates and my school. And he motioned towards certain groups of creepers, giving them specific instructions. The energy in the room changed. The creepers quit cowering and began to stir like fight dogs nearing an arena, frothing at the mouth. And with that, their leader tugged hard on the reins, commanding his slaves to carry him away. His back was to me. "I see you, Molech." I only whispered it, but that's all it took. His head snapped, rotating 180 degrees, his paralyzing eyes missile-locked on me. The reins fell from his hands, and he charged at me so fast I had no time to brace myself. No time to react at all. He lifted off the ground like he was racing up an invisible staircase, and in seconds his face was inches from mine. His eyes were much more horrendous than I'd thought. Black as the abyss he'd thrown Megan into, pupils empty, not white like they'd appeared before. He hovered in midair, wrapping his long fingers around the banisters, the only barrier between us. He despised me. It was more than the callous look on his face. I could physically feel his hatred for me, like every cell in my body was being crushed under his heel of absolute loathing. He proceeded to open his mouth wide enough to swallow me whole, dislocating his jaws, his ghastly face now shockingly stretched. He let out a growl that felt like it might snap my bones. I officially began to hyperventilate. His fury didn't last long. His skin began to crumble like ashes, and he faded into a smoky pollution, vanishing into thin air. The creepers dispersed, but I stayed slumped on the stairwell, hands pressed around my throat, trying to breathe. The thought that my friends might be in that place, trapped in that hopeless hellhole. No matter how hard I tried, I couldn't catch my breath. Finally, I was able to pull myself up, then stand as the bell rang. People poured onto the stairwell. "Owen?" Rayanne found me. I threw my arms around her and wouldn't let go. "You're trembling. What happened?" "I saw him, Rayanne. The one who took Megan. But he doesn't just capture dead souls. He's the one plotting against us." "The suicides?" "All of it." I gripped her arms and pulled her to me. "Molech, he's leading the charge, commanding the creepers. And there's something else coming. I don't know what or where, but they're planning it. A mass attack, something terrible." She pressed a hand to my chest over my lungs, her way of trying to calm me. "Come to my house after school," she said, "and we'll figure this out." She hugged me tight. "It will be okay, Owen. You'll see." I didn't believe her, but I was grateful beyond words for her. I skipped my last two class periods, parking my bike on a back road, while I waited for school to get out. Sitting there with no noise, alone, just my thoughts, the sick irony of it hit me. Creepers want to be on the earth, attached to our lives, dwelling inside us if given a half a chance. I'd imagine, far away from that pit of eternal torment. Yet they work tirelessly to see us end up there, tossed into the fire like bags of garbage while they go look for more victims. By now, I genuinely believed in heaven, a glorious place where people like Rayanne and Ms. Ida are welcome, where watchmen go to relax and hang their armor for a while and interact and maybe even laugh with human souls. I believed it because I felt it every time I laid eyes on the watchmen, the undeniable sense that they hail from a kingdom all its own, a universe of peace far beyond the turmoil of this world and the evil that stalks it. But me? Would I be welcome there? My cell phone swooshed, and I jumped,
still so